clerk for the day is Karen Segrist. Legislative Fiscal Office is represented by Dallas Wyan. And we have before us Ms. Lori Warner. Lori, would you like to go ahead and start out? Or let's see, do we start with Dallas?
Okay, I can start off a little bit, Mr. Chair. Facilities Division handles state property that is owned in the mall area and manages it. It also provides facility services to state agencies that own their own properties. It's involved with the disposal of real property, that surplus real property. And also during this presentation, there'll be a couple of tabs in your binder that are labeled capital improvement and capital construction. Those are the capital construction portion that, again, will be brought up and discussed here, but those numbers won't be included in the department's budget. Those projects, if approved, will be included in the separate capital construction bill. So that's a short introduction for
thank
the
you.
Division.
Thank you, Dallas. I understand there's a bill somewhere in the process of this legislative assembly to go ahead and have all property, including surplus property, identified and tracked by the state of Oregon, so that and that should be part of the standard general accepted accounting principles and FASB and GASB and all of those good things anyway, to go ahead and divulge where all of that's at and the status of it.
I've seen the bill, Mr.
Okay. Chair. Lori, good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Facilities Division Administrator for Department of Administrative Services. I'm just going to make a $5 contribution here to your piggy bank.
Are you going to use
some receipts?
And I will try.
You know what? We really ought to give receipts for the Internal Revenue Service. Perhaps when Director Harchenko shows up here, she could go ahead and just give us some blank receipt writing authority for the American Cancer Society.
I'm sure we'll go through some acronyms here. So. This is the Facility Division. The program overview, just to give you a little bit of context, we're one of 19 agencies that own and manage facilities for the state. We own about 2.9 million of the state's 3.9 million square footage, so that's about 21% of the square footage that DAS owns. That excludes the university system from those numbers, and that property reflects the properties that are over $1 million in value. We provide services to 3.6 million of the 13.9 million square foot. We negotiate state agency leases for space that we don't have available that we get from the private sector for about 4 million square feet. And in 1999, DAS was directed to coordinate facility inventory and planning for all state-owned real property so that there was a central collection point for all that data. So we do manage that now.
And so, Lori, even after the 1999 law, then, there are still 19 agencies that own and manage properties, but is there some coordination then through the Facilities Division?
Correct. The Facilities Division has a process where those agencies all report into us about their state-owned space, and we keep records of that, and they also are asked to come and present to the Capital Projects Advisory Board any projects that they're proposing for the budget, and they're asked to report on the status of their maintenance and or deferred maintenance of their buildings.
That is, excuse me for belaboring this point, but is that an efficient use of the other 18 agencies' time and energies to go ahead and to manage and operate these other properties where we have that facilities opportunity and the
DAS Facilities manages largely the office spaces for the state where you're housing, like what's on the mall here, office buildings. Many of the other state agencies that own their own space, like Fish and Wildlife or state parks, those kinds of agencies have a little different nature to their business. But, you know, ODOT owns some of their office space and such, too. So it's just how I think it's evolved over time.
Okay. Please.
Our mission, when we go to that, is to provide and operate the facilities in a manner that maximizes and protects the state's investment and meets the needs of the state, and the statutory authority is shown there. The goals, basically, are to guide state facilities to conform with legislative and gubernatorial policy, as well as to keep the cost below the private sector charges for comparable services. the basic programs within the division, there's five of them basically. Administration, where we do operations of Stateway facility policy. Real property that negotiates the leases and sells property. Operations and maintenance, which basically runs repairs and services the state buildings. State parking, which provides user-paid parking spaces. And project management, where we do design, construction, and refurbishing of the buildings. Our customers are basically state agencies and state employees for the parking program. The administration section has myself as the administrator, and then the statewide facility program, where we have the state architect, the state facility coordinator, and the resource coordinator. This group develops the policies and standards, analyzes the alternatives, maintains the databases that we have on statewide facilities, coordinates the capital budget reviews, and monitors the resource and conservation efforts. The real property section, there's six FTE. They arrange for private and state-owned office space leases for the agencies. Again, we lease about twice as much space as we own. There's about 250 leases or amendments that are negotiated each year out of a portfolio of about 600. And then we have one FTE that's dedicated to selling state property and doing the property database and transactions. Operations and maintenance is the biggest portion of the division. There's 170 FTE managing 44 buildings. Three of those we own, and or 34 of those we own, and 10 are service agreements. We perform planned maintenance to prevent more costly damage. There's really been a focus on making that happen so that we maintain the resources for a longer period of time. And then it's full service rent. Basically, it's water, sewer, electrical, custodial, groundskeeping, the whole thing. There aren't any add-on charges. Project management, there's 13 FTE. They manage planning, construction, refurbishing, or remodeling of buildings. When we talk about the capital construction and capital improvement budget, these projects are the projects that then come back to these folks to manage. So that's where the connection is. How much you approve in capital improvement and construction drives this workload. Seven FTE are the actual project managers. Two of them are space planners, where they go in and design systems, furnitures, and layouts to make efficient use of the interior space. And there's four administrative contract managers, accountants, that kind of thing in that section. Parking and alternative transport, we have six FTE that run about 4,500 spaces in Salem and Portland. Public transit has become a major focus and other options as parking has become more critical for the mall area. We paid, this whole program is paid for by the users. There's no general fund subsidy or other fund, federal fund. And we pay about $460,000 in property taxes on these structures because they are not general fund structures. The org chart, this is the one for this biennium, a 103. And it stays the same basically for 03-05. You see at the bottom that there's two policy packages, and we're going to talk about those later, one for real property and one for project management. The performance measures, the division uses as an overall measure the uniform rent cost per square foot as a percentage of the private market rates as the key performance measure. Costs have remained below the private sector alternatives. In 0103, the uniform rent rate has been 80% of the private sector rate. For 0305, it will rise to 84%. The target is to remain at 90. And the increase from 0103 to 0305 represents about half of that is elimination of a rent subsidy that the legislature had allocated general funds to the division to bring down the rate when they built a lot of buildings on the mall. One of the major components of the uniform rent rate is debt service, and so it's been bought down over the last probably 10 biennium, maybe 5 biennium, and that has been exhausted. So then the full cost of that debt service has to be borne by the agencies on the mall. There's rising energy costs, which I'm sure you're aware of. We're opening the North Mall office building, which has additional debt service, and then there were salary and benefit changes. And so the three components in uniform rent are really debt service, depreciation, and operational costs. The factors affecting the service from the division, state population growth, as there's more public coming in and out of the buildings, there's additional wear and tear on those facilities. There's also expanding state agencies. As they increase their facilities needs, then it drives what we do also. There's urban traffic and air quality issues that we face in terms of trying to deal with how do we manage the state workforce and their parking, commuting, transit needs. We have uncertain energy costs right now, and so we've worked on those extensively, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then there's a private and public move towards sustainability, and so our focus is on can we reuse existing buildings, how do we do that most effectively, cost-effectively for the state over time. Agencies need to be looking at that when they try to locate in lease space as opposed to having a build-to-suit. We look closely at whether or not there isn't an existing building that can be used and how that might play out in terms of sustainability. The North Mall building has also got a lot of sustainability components to it when it was designed. The interagency, intergovernmental parts of the work that we do, we are the state's general landlord, basically. We allocate the space among state agencies. You can imagine in these buildings, when one person wants more space, another person or agency may need to give space up, or we may need to figure out how we can more effectively use the space so they can all get what they need. We are the leasing agent, finding space to serve the state agencies. We're the central coordinator of the facilities, information, and policies. We lease private space, and that supports local government taxes when we do that. We pay taxes on the state parking properties that we own. We contract with the Salem Transit District for services to enhance the ridership and reduce parking and traffic on the mall. And we work with state and local governments on emergency planning, construction projects, and property sales. The administrative cost controls internally. We have a focus on preventative maintenance to avoid the greater costs later on if you don't maintain it. We contract with the private sector when it's cost-effective. Much of that contracting is done under the construction program for capital improvement and construction projects and studies. We stop, defer, or redirect construction projects when they're cost prohibitive. There was an extensive amount of work done on the Portland State Crime Lab and also on the North Mall building when it was being developed. We contract with the district, the Salem Transit District, for park and ride and bus passes. So those are those cost controls. The external cost controls, we work with an interagency coalition to control the energy costs. Basically, there's a state group of state agency users, the largest state property owners, and the Department of Energy that have looked at new standards. You may have known that during the last biennium and this biennium, too, we've controlled the heating and cooling in buildings set at lower temperatures or higher temperatures in the summer than what was generally there before in order to reduce energy costs. We work with the market in terms of looking at do we want to alternatively change our energy supplier because you can do that now. Is it cost effective? So we've gone through some processes to do that. We've coordinated the sale of Fairview Campus, the Fish and Wildlife Building, and the acquisition of the State Police Crime Lab and medical examiner's facilities.
Just a question there, Lori. So the OSP crime labs have been facilitated. Those leases and so forth have come through the, or that's just the acquisition of the Portland Crime Lab?
That's the acquisition of the building in Portland that's going to be renovated to be the Portland, to be the crime lab and the morgue for OSP.
Senator Devlin, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get a clarification on one thing. So when you were listing in terms of the number of buildings that you have purview over, those numbers would seem to me would be like reflective of the buildings in the Salem area here, major state buildings, and maybe the major state buildings in the metropolitan area. But do you have any purview over the literally dozens, if not hundreds, of human resources offices and employment offices and DMV offices and
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, the leasing side of what we do controls the leases for many of those offices that you're speaking to that are the smaller scale type of offices that DMV or human resources or employment uses out in the smaller communities. So we do have effect over those. Essentially, the agency comes to us and says, we need X amount of space in Medford or Salem, you know, that's not on the mall or Bend. And then we do the property search to see what's available and help them evaluate, you know, what it is they need versus what those costs are going to be. And then the staff negotiates the lease.
Yeah. Do we explore in those cases well, the differences between long-term costs and leases versus purchase, or
there's, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin.
The chair is going to yield the gavel to Senator Devlin, so that you can direct the questions directly without coming through the chair. I this is an excellent line of questioning, and I do have some concerns about some of the same issues. So please continue, Chair Devlin.
There's been several studies done in regards to that question, and that the basic answer is that where you have a long-term commitment and a stable program that's not going to change significantly, it's more cost-effective to own than it is to lease. If, though, for example, you're going to change your service delivery model, you know, every 5 to 7 years, or you're going to be either growing or shrinking, it's usually better that you have a lease where you have some more flexibility as opposed to owning the property. And so we have a balance. You know, we own about 50% and we lease about 50% or 60%, and it kind of swings back and forth depending on the growth in the agencies.
I was just actually trying to get a clarification because I saw those numbers, and with the Department of Human Resources, I'm always so tempted, even though it's like, let's say, Adult and Family Services, and which I think still exists in a sense, but we're not supposed to call them Adult and Family Services or Services to Children and Families. Or
they still exist.
They still exist, but I have, there has to be literally, you know, literally a couple of hundred state facilities out there, actually, in terms of individual branch offices, when you consider all the different levels.
That is correct. There's a lot of lease space out there.
And Senator Devlin, since you brought up my area of human services, with that, with them, you try to make certain that you're putting the facility, leasing the facility, or purchase where the need is. So the leasing piece is a little more palatable than building, because, you know, your need, for example, currently, if I looked at Salem, where you're talking Silverton Road, you're talking out by Lancaster, but you go where the population is, rather than talking about like here in the mall where we know that this is the stable piece. So you will find that it's a lot more cost effective to do leasing in those instances than in others. The other thing about human services, because you may have the adult and family service need, but you know, you may have your foster care need someplace else. So that's kind of,
Mr. Chairman,
I think we're working off of the chairmanship now at the center.
Yes.
So I just had a comment that I, if I may, please. The concern I have, it follows where you were coming from, Senator Devlin, and that's my concern about the opportunities to consolidate and to use the one-stop shopping and those kinds of things. I'm sure you've got some personal experiences within your own senatorial district, but within my House district, we've had some concerns these past few years relative to a consolidation and finally going out to, at one point, the community college was willing to go ahead and build a facility in conjunction with the Department of Human Services on a long-term lease arrangement. Finally, there was a hue and cry over that particular issue, and finally what happened was that some private empty facilities, new empty facilities, that were owned privately became available and were negotiated on some long-term lease arrangements. And the question I had there was, with regard to the service and maintenance factors, you know, when is it, the one of the comments that was made was that privately, that contracts are made to the private sector when it's cost effective. And I'd like to explore that just a little bit, not just the contracts for the maintenance and those kinds of things, but all of the kinds of issues that we get into when the state is building its facilities. When is it more cost effective to go ahead and I've seen that analysis before from your facility, but I guess the concern that I've got now is one of the things that we always had in that cost analysis was here's what it's going to cost us to have this state employee go out and do that, and here's what the private janitorial custodial firm is offering this to be done, and because the two numbers are so close together, we'll go ahead with the state providing its own custodial, and then we find out that we've got a 20% rate on PERS as opposed to a 13%, and maybe it's 10% higher than that. Well, if you'd have gone back at the and looked at the original numbers, they weren't 10% apart. It might have been 1 or 2% apart, and we selected the state's own method of becoming cost-effective, providing that as a state service, and now what we've seen is that private sector would have been much less because there is no tail coverage in effect. So that's a concern that I have when we talk about the internal cost controls and those kinds of things, Laurie.
Let's see if he wants his gavel back.
You want your gavel back?
If you're done pursuing that line of question,
I'm done
with that
line of
Senator, questions. Please.
Mr. Chair, I do have another question.
But
it's not long.
Continue, Senator.
And just to go back, because you mentioned the Capital Planning Committee, and I don't think you meant commission. Is there a body of individuals who meet to discuss plans and within facilities and other entities within the Capitol?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, there's two groups there, and they sometimes get confused. There's the Capital Planning Commission, which focuses on the Capitol Mall, land use, buildings, etc. And then there's the Capital Projects Advisory Committee that we have internally to Facilities Division. And those are two different roles. The Capital Projects Advisory Group that we have basically is the one I was talking about, where we ask the state agencies, based on the 1999 statute, to submit to us their projects that they're going to propose in the budget and their current buildings and square footage and their maintenance plans for the buildings they currently own. And so that advisory board is advisory to Facilities Division and also to BAM, Budget Management and Legislative Fiscal Office, about the status of how the agencies are dealing with managing the properties that they have. And then they make a recommendation, either in support or not in support, of any projects that they're proposing for the budget process. That's the difference.
Can you share with us what work Facilities does with the City of Salem?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, you know, Facilities Division is working all the time, the project managers under the construction section, with the city on numerous projects for permits directly. We work mostly with the Public Works Department and with the planning and community development folks on different permits and such that we need. We have, when I arrived, there had been some issues around how the city and state work together. And I've had several conversations with city administrators and with the mayor to say, you know, I think that it is beneficial if we all find a collaborative way to work together to solve these issues, so that we can move forward as opposed to having adversarial relationships. And that has been very well received at the city. They really want to move in that direction, and that has been the tone that we've tried to move forward with. We also are a member of the Capital Planning Commission, and as such, you know, we see proposals that come before that commission, but I guess my position is that the city and the state ought to have worked out the issues before they come to the Capital Planning Commission, because that's not a very good forum for trying to work out technical issues. It really is an oversight body, and has kind of the big picture of, is this the right thing for the mall? Does that make sense? Or for the state property in Marion and Polk counties?
Currently, the Capital Planning Commission goes beyond the mall.
Yes, it's Marion and Polk counties.
And I just was looking at the relative statute 276.227 3A, the director of the Department of Administrative Services shall establish a public review process for the proposed capital projects of all state agencies. To assist in this review, the director shall establish a capital projects advisory board consisting of 7 members. 5 members will be from the public members, knowledgeable about construction, facilities management, and maintenance issues. 2 members may be state employees. The director shall appoint the chairman of the board. I'm looking at that and saying that looks an awful like the Capital Planning Commission.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Capital Projects Advisory Board is not looking at the zoning and those types of issues that the Capital Project or the Capital Planning Commission is. There are some differences.
But if I could interrupt you a little, Lori, if you've got 5 of the 7 members on that board who are the public members, knowledgeable about constructions and facilities maintenance and management issues.
They're all outside members, yes, that are from the business community. Bill Leland.
They should know something, yeah, to be able to tap into the energies that those folks have had. I mean, I've never met a person who has built their own building, even an addition onto a home, that didn't learn a great deal about the bureaucracy of the state of Oregon. And I mean, if these folks are all knowledgeable about public services and building and construction and maintenance and management of buildings, they sure know that there's the permitting process. So, I
don't disagree with you. They're just different bodies set up at different times.
Okay. Senator Devlin?
I understand the roles of the two different bodies, and I understand the Planning Commission to be more focused on the long-term land use issues in the area and the long-term issues of the development of the mall. Isn't there a distinct difference, too, in the sense of, as they're constructed in state law, this advisory group that you have is advisory, and the Planning Commission is, in a sense, regulatory? I mean, it does have some authority.
Well,
I don't know that I can speak with any expertise to say that the Capital Projects Advisory Board is advisory, yes, to us, to the division, as well as to Budget Management and LFL, Legislative Fiscal Office. They are advisory. The Capital Planning Commission actually has to approve the projects and the siting of those projects, and that they conform, find that they, with land use type findings, that they conform to the area plan, the record for that area. So they have a different role, and I think it's been evolving.
Mr. Chairman, may I follow up?
Please follow up, Senator.
And expanding on the regulatory role in terms of findings, they make quasi-judicial decisions which are appealable to the Land Use Board of Appeals. So I think there's a distinct difference. There may be some overlap in responsibilities, but there's a distinct difference between being advisory and actually making decisions.
I have another question since we're bringing this up. Mr. Chair, when the Capital Planning Commission began a lot of years ago when I was a lot younger, it was devoting itself to the mall because there was the issue with the city planning for construction of buildings and other, without having the input from the city itself, and that created the issue. Since then, it has gone beyond the mall and has gone into Marion and Polk County. One would wonder, since the state has buildings in other parts of the state, whether or not that same concept flows to, let's say, Beaverton, Portland, or whatever. I mean, since we've gone beyond just the small issue, Senator Devlin, and it may be well to look at how broadly the capital planning responsibility should encompass.
Senator Devlin, I need to come back to your point regarding the advisory, and I think that's an excellent. But it merely just lacks anything other than advisory. The director appoints, they give counsel. Are they active? Is this board active?
Yes, it is.
But for the fact that because the director can, it appears to me that the director has the ability then to implement whatever they advise. But they don't have a judicial standing or quasi judicial standing that perhaps a capital. Construction or the Capital Planning Commission has for construction or oversight of anything. But I guess I'm concerned about duplication. And because we are looking for the efficiencies within anything that may have that duplicating responsibility, I'm wondering if the Capital Projects Advisory Board shouldn't have just a little bit more teeth in its current status and the ability to give recommendations, but without the weight of coming from the Capital Projects Commission, the Capital Planning Commission. But I sense your reticence to pursue that much further here, but I can appreciate that.
And I guess for me, if you're going to have a commission for just two counties and you have state activity in other counties, why are we just restricting it now? The mall is just about completed when we talk about construction on the mall. And we've gone beyond now for the Capital Planning Commission's responsibility to include beyond the mall to the entire Marion County and now over into Polk County. So it seems to me with these kinds of expansion, if we really truly say that it's about land use issues and what have you where we're doing construction, it would also lend its tentacles into Portland, Beaverton, and every place else in the state. If we're still saying that it only relates to Salem, then yours truly has a problem, because that's saying that it's putting some onuses on Salem that does not exist on the other parts of the state.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, I actually agree with you on that aspect of because the state does build some very major facilities in other locations than Marion and Polk counties. And while I don't really have any criticism of the location of the new state office building in the Portland area, I mean, it probably could have helped if there had been more interaction on its location. I don't even remember all the discussions of it, because I think it followed one of the basic premises of wanting to move more state facilities over to what has become literally a government row on the east side, so to speak, over with the, I think, Bonneville Power Administration is there, and there's Port of Portland is there, and literally everybody else. But it is a parking and traffic nightmare, which you might be able to say about portions of.
Well,
but
you know, actually, it's kind of interesting, because before the Capital Planning Commission and before the days of neighborhood associations and what have you, was when some of this all started. You now have neighborhood associations that interact with planning. That I'm sure that it exists in Portland, and I don't know about some of the other communities that really play a vital role in whether or not a particular location will house any facility, whether we're talking about a state facility or private. You know, they become very good at their roles in determining whether or not Salem will house something in the east side, and working with the city. Our city has a neighborhood association in every one of our particular zones, if you look at us and interact with the state. There's very little you're going to get passed in this town without the involvement of our neighborhood associations.
Yes, Senator, please.
I had one minor question, actually, on my own curiosity again. Are we totally divested of the old state office building now? We have no role in it? It's been years since it's been...
In Portland?
In Portland?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm not even familiar with it. It
would have been better torn down, actually.
That's one of those long-term maintenance issues, and I've made a little note to that. The issue of one thing I don't want to have happen with these facilities is that they will become older than 50 years of age as we work towards sustainability and become a historic structure so that we can never tear it down. And must continue going and repair it. I don't know, maybe at age 49, well, I better be careful. Anyway, I'm just concerned about the long-term sustainability becoming a historic buildings issue, which we do have throughout state government, unfortunately, and local government. Please continue, Lori.
Mr. Chair, I might make one comment. In the outlying areas outside of Salem, I think the community solution teams have played a role in coordinating some of the facility issues that have gone on and filled some of that role that Capital Planning Commission does here in Salem.
When has DAS been on the Community Solutions team?
We have a conversation with them about what's going on, that type of thing, but we're not a member of them. We aren't.
So it's an informal...
It must be informal.
Yes.
Of course, all of the community solutions are somewhat informal, but I've never known DAS to have a seat at the table of any of those community solutions teams meetings.
No, but when they're talking about,
construction of a state facility?
The state facility, like that we're selling the damaged property up at Wilsonville, and there's been a community solution team involved with that in terms of working between the city and the state and ourselves in the sale of that property.
I see.
Working out some of those issues.
Well, now Representative Johnson is here, and maybe she'd like to take a look at the statute which deals with the Capital Projects Advisory Board. We've had a very healthy and welcome Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson's been excused for a meeting in district. We appreciate you being back. We just have taken, and Ms. Warner has taken us through the better portion of the administrative issues within the Department of Administrative Services relative to physical facilities. And the facilities division, the concern that we were just working on and had just gotten to deals with that Capital Projects Advisory Group, where they are strictly advisory, and perhaps there should be a little more teeth in that, so that the Capital Planning Commission, because the folks that are on this 7-member advisory, which we were told is still active. Are the people that probably should have been at the table with regard to the construction or the Capital Planning Commission issues relative to the local Salem Polk County issues. Senator Devlin then brought up the concerns for, as did Senator Winters, that we have representation with regard to the expansion of facilities outside of Polk and Marion counties. That those folks have a place at the table as well. So that's kind of where we had come to as Ms.
Thank
Warner
you.
Was giving her presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, actually, the budget management.
Oh, we got to that point, okay.
What can you do? For the record, Cora Parker from the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division. Just a quick overview of the Facilities Division and their governor's recommended budget. If you look at the first page here, it looks like we have a 47% reduction in total funds for the division from the legislatively approved through FIS special session level versus the governor's recommended budget. What you see in the $91 million figure includes also the payoff of COPs that were refunded during the 0103 biennium. So that actually looks somewhat artificially high at that midpoint. So the two figures that you're actually comparing are the roughly $31.4 million in non-limited versus $31.1. So really the budget is marginally changed at this point on a biennium over biennium basis. Looking at just the breakout between other funds limited and other funds non-limited, roughly an even split between the two funding categories. Again, the governor's budget is a 47% decrease technically, although, as I mentioned, it's largely unchanged in reality. The budget continues core functions. It does eliminate three positions related to the second special session reductions related to centralized trash. I think we talked about that and how that impacted the uniform rent rate by a reduction of 3 cents. You see three positions going away related to that. It also provides for two additional positions relative to a policy package that we'll talk about in a minute. And I'm sorry, I'm not moving forward. Looking quickly at where the $63.5 million total funds are broken out in the division, Lori mentioned that the operations and maintenance section is the largest component of this division's budget. Parking makes up about 9%. Project management is around 4%. Administration at 2%. And real property is just 3%. So you see the operations and maintenance is definitely the largest component. Looking at where the dollars go from a personnel versus service and supply dollars, really the categories here are pretty evenly broken out. Again, personal services at 33.8%, service and supplies and debt service at 29.5% and 36% respectively. And there's a small portion of capital outlay that you see in the budget as well. Talking about the premise behind the governor's recommended budget, we began the 2001-03 legislatively adopted level at $59.9 million total funds. There were legislatively approved actions through April 2002, including reduction of just about $800,000. Again, those were one-time reductions related to the second special session. There were some. There was a portion of that carried forward those three positions that I talked to you about earlier. Base budget adjustments include the roll-up of position actions and compensation changes, and then some debt service adjustments for our existing certificates of participation. Essential packages resulted in a reduction, and Lori will talk about that in a little bit more detail in a moment. Policy packages, package 090 is that program reduction that removes the three custodian positions. Package 111, facilities workload issues. This is an increase of 724,524 other funds and the addition of two positions, and that is two full-time equivalent positions. And again, Lori will talk about the needs behind that package in a moment. With respect to fee or revenue changes, the monthly per square foot charge, the uniform rent charge that is increasing from $1.08 to $1.30 in 2003-05. That is, again, as Lori mentioned, largely a result of the reduction of the offsetting funds that were available to help mitigate some of those increases in prior biennia. Agencies that will be in new buildings, and I believe this is just the North Mall building at this point, will have a 10-cent surcharge on that, and that's to deal with the cost of COP issuance for that building. And as I mentioned, that stabilization fund will be depleted. Technical adjustments that we'll have to deal with in this budget are the same as the others that we've talked to you about, and that is largely salary freeze and other position-related actions. Mr. Chairman,
this is the growth and reduction for the division, starting off with real property. We're asking for one FTE in the package. That's largely related. Private leasing workload has grown, that's true, but the biggest growth has been in the transactions involving real estate properties. We have had one position all along that has dealt with real estate workload, but in recent years, the legislature has asked us to manage the disposition of several large properties, including Fairview, Damish, Fish and Wildlife Building, and now the Mill Creek property. And this biennium, we have had a limited duration position that was part of the budget to deal with that, and so we're asking for that position as a permanent position in this package. Operations and maintenance actually has a reduction of the three custodial positions. Out of the special sessions, we decided that we would do a centralization of trash in the buildings, which means that each employee has to empty their own trash into a separate to a central receptacle so that the custodial staff don't have to go to each workstation and empty them. And we were able to reduce staffing when we centralized that.
Senator Winters.
Lori, can we go back to your multiple use transactions? And you said they've increased. Fairview has sold. And what is the staff's activity now with respect to Fairview?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, Fairview, there is an option to purchase that's being exercised. The sale, they made a million dollar option to purchase, and so they have to get approval of a master plan through the city. And once they do that, then the sale will become completed. That's supposed to happen at the end of April. But that's an incremental development project over a five-year period, I believe. And so there will be ongoing involvement in terms of that particular piece of property between us and the city and the developer.
The second question, how many properties, big properties, are you currently involved with to try to get sold?
We have the Fairview property. We have the damaged property at Wilsonville. We have the Fish and Wildlife building in Portland that's just completed, and we're working on the building that's now being constructed in Salem. We have the Mill Creek property. That's the correctional property that we were directed to work on for the benefit of the cultural trust. And so that's an ongoing project between us and the city. And we made an e-board presentation with corrections on that just recently, actually. So that property is continuing. And, you know, we're looking in this budget. You will see there's a proposal for a DEQ, DHS health lab facility in Portland that we've been doing the search for properties on. So there's ongoing pieces of property that continue to come to us.
Has a cost analysis been done as to whether or not it would be more feasible to have private realtors, engaged in these activities rather than have our own staff do it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we have looked at our transaction costs, and you'll see that in a little bit in real property compared to a private sector market, and ours are usually lower than what the private sector market rates are for property acquisitions.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. One of the areas that I keep hearing complaints from agencies about are buildings that are leased for them. Again, I drift back a few years, but I remember when the Mill Creek building was leased for ODOT and the plethora of problems that have happened there. I've watched the DPSST transaction unfold to the dissatisfaction of a number of people in the legislature. And I guess I'd like to follow on Senator Winter's theory about, you say that you looked at it and rejected it. Is there any evidence of, looked at the concept of using private realtors to do some of this work, is there any evidence of the analysis that accompanied your finding that the state folks can do it cheaper than externals?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we compare to market rate all the time in terms of what our costs are as a percentage of the sale versus what the market would be. That it's an ongoing performance standard we have for real property. So that's an ongoing comparison. There isn't a study as such that would say, that we filed that, but that's basically what we use is the market data all the time to see if we're on track with what we do in real property.
Any further follow-up there?
No, Mr. Chair.
Senator?
When you do your study, do you also include what it costs to continue to have the real property on the books? Is that a part of the analysis that's done when you look at whether or not it's the market? You look at that plus the staff involved plus the amount of the commission given to the realtor. And I raise that because when we did the Fairview property, when we did the analysis, and we were holding on to the property, and when the analysis was completed, we felt that had we gone forward to sell the property, we actually gained more than holding on to it on the long term with the hope that we were going to sometime realize more money. And by the time we discovered what we were losing in the revenue, it was actually costing us more. And if you add the staffing and some of that on top of that, is that the kind of analysis that you're doing now currently?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I'm not sure that I follow all the components you were speaking to, but the Fairview property, or any state property that we're holding that's surplus property, to keep it and keep it maintained. For the Fairview property, DHS, Department of Human Services, had a lot of costs for holding that property when it was vacant, essentially. And so that was part of that analysis in terms of saying, should we sell this property and dispose of it?
Laurie, Senator Winters was the one who pushed them to get off that property and sell it. Because it was costing us more to maintain the property than what we would realize in the return. That's one issue that's there, even with other properties that we currently have on the books.
That's
Does
true.
That figure into the analysis when you're talking about whether or not we should turn it over to a realtor or we continue to do what we're doing?
With the information that I'm saying that we compare to is a realtor will have a 6% or 8% transaction fee on the value of your property. We look at what is the cost for our staff to do that same transaction. And a little bit later, we're going to talk about what those rates are compared to what the market rates are. So that's the kind of analysis.
I just had one quick question relative to this whole issue of bringing on staff to, and I assume that the larger multiple use transactions have increased, which includes the state police lab, the crime lab. That must be the construction of that crime lab facility or the acquisition. What?
Mr. Chair, it was the acquisition of property search for a suitable building that would meet the needs for both the crime lab and the morgue.
That's not the construction then?
That's not the construction.
But that's a completed transaction at this point?
That the property, yes, that closed.
How about is any of this work that could be done by a clerk of the works on the construction, or is this is just for the procurement and our disposition?
This is for the procurement and disposition of properties, because those properties involve a number of players typically and a number of things that have to be done in order to sell the property or buy a particular property.
Okay, and so
they have to have real estate knowledge.
I just wanted to then follow up with regard to the Mill Creek property. The Mill Creek property is going in large part to the Cultural Trust.
Mr. Chair, the bill that passed last session directed corrections to work with us to identify 300 to 400 acres that could be sold for the benefit of the Cultural Trust. And in order to identify which 300 to 400 acres to sell, we basically undertook an evaluation of the entire parcel, and because the Cultural Trust wanted to make sure that they got equal value and didn't get a piece of that parcel that was worth less than what other portions of it might be worth. And so there was an evaluation done of the entire property, because also from prior sessions, Oregon Correctional Enterprises is also to get a portion of that property. So
I guess I'm concerned about that whole process continuing on to generate additional costs.
Mr. Chair, we made a report to the emergency board in January and shared with them what the results of the study were, which the study results were along the lines of saying, rather than the state dividing this up into various pieces and selling it off individually, the highest and best value would be gained by retaining it as a whole and dividing the proceeds as opposed to dividing the property, because it is identified in the Salem plan as an industrial area, and the city is not willing to divide it up to give us the approval to divide it up at this point. It has to be done as a whole project. And so we are to report back to the emergency board during the session to discuss what the planning would look like to make that happen, because it involves zone changes and other city service changes that would have to be accomplished, and what the cost of that would be versus what the value realized to the state. So we are to report back in May, and there will be a decision then at that point about which direction we go. At this point, the only thing we could do with the property would be to divide it, partition it, not get a subdivision, but partition, and it would be sold as ag land.
Representative Johnson's recommended.
If the chair will indulge me, just a whole bunch of things.
Okay, I'm going to yield it so that you can work through that without going through the chair.
You just said that there are all these issues about zone changes and the Mill Creek site, and yet approvals continued on all through the regular session and through the interim, such as it was, that allowed DPSST to start doing schematic drawings. With a site unresolved, agreements with the city unresolved, real money being spent on the DPSST site. And this is the first time now that I've heard, despite repeated requests for information, that the city is unwilling to give approval to divide the property.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, two different issues. The Mill Creek property that's being looked at for the Cultural Trust and OCE would be for a different use and not allowed under the current zoning that's there. And so whereas the DPSST siting is for a use within that zoning that can be done under a conditional use permit from the city. So we're talking about, this is a 2,000-acre site, so we're talking about different portions of this property being used in different ways. So the city, in terms of DPSST, there's an interagency agreement between corrections and DPSST, so there's no partitioning or subdivision required by the city, and it can be used under that process as a conditional use.
But we had the head of the Salem Planning Commission sitting right in the same chair you're sitting in last week saying that those approvals have not been realized.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the approvals for those, the conditional use does not go through the planning chair. It goes through an administrative hearing process at the city, so it's not under that planning chair's jurisdiction. Those hearings, my understanding is, are scheduled this month or next from the city, and the conditional use permit is part of that hearing process. And the services that the DPSST needs will be extensions, because that property is within the urban growth boundary but outside the urban service area.
Right.
So DPSST, as part of the cost of this project, knew that they had to connect the services themselves to the city, as opposed to the city paying with public funds to connect those. So that was part of their cost analysis and citing.
Well, be it as it may that the Planning Commission may not be involved in this administrative process, we had the head of the Salem Planning Commission assure a legislative committee that agreements about building DPSST outside the urban planning had not yet been negotiated with the city. Now, there may be some disconnect there, and I'd like to not waste the committee's time but ask you to follow up on it. One other question about Mill Creek. Are you currently master planning Mill Creek again?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we're not master planning Mill Creek.
So what are you relying on then to decide what parcels would go where? What's the highest and best use for that 2,000-acre site?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that analysis came out of the study, the private consultant study that we just recently had done, that evaluated the parcels that could be sold, what the highest and best use would be.
How old is that study?
It's like a month.
Okay, what happened to the 1999 study of that site?
My understanding, there was a 1999 study that was undertaken for that property and a draft master plan that was developed for the Mill Creek parcel that was not adopted by either the city or the state.
At some considerable cost to do that. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, how many times are we going to keep master planning the same site?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, since that plan wasn't adopted, you know, it's on the shelf. It has been used in this evaluation that we just had completed. But as time has gone on, the state, through the legislative process, has directed, you know, several other things to happen to the property. And so I think that question lies in what the legislature really wants to do or have happen with the property.
Two more points. Given that you're asking for this additional FTE to do some of this work, how many consultants are you using for each one of the different sites?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'd have to go back and look and see how many consultants were done on each. There's typically one consultant been used on each one of these projects thus far for various aspects, whether it's environmental or planning or cleanups and things like that.
Could you get us a list for all of the surplus sites that are under the aegis of this area and who the consultants are and what the cost of the contracts are?
I'd be glad to.
Last but not least, it seems to me that now that the governor's budget recommends the mothballing of the DPSST process for some time uncertain, that the facilities group here, or at a minimum the Salem, the Capital Planning Commission, that somewhere there's a disconnect to have money being spent on planning for facilities when the source of revenue to pay for those facilities is declining, like the criminal fines and assessment account. I'm just trying to see where the disconnect is, because I watched the DPSST planning process move rapidly through Department of Administrative Services and get provisional approvals as it moved along with real money being spent. And in my observation, some of the underlying homework that needed to be done not accomplished, and I don't know how much has been spent to this point on the planning work for DPSST. That would be something, presumably, that your facilities folks could come up with.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the facilities division's involvement in the DPSST siting, we have been advisory to that process, and we ran the selection or identification process for the property that would be under consideration. And then DPSST took those sites that were identified and had their internal processes with committees to narrow these selections down and then make a final siting decision that was done by DPSST itself. There's always, I think, with any site that you're considering for either purchase or potential construction, cost of exploring, you know, whether that option is going to work out or not. We certainly could put those costs together for the DPSST site if you'd like to see what that was.
I would.
But most of these planning processes are incremental.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson is recognized here. Senator Johnson, Senator Rogers.
I would think, that we also have to bear some of the responsibility, because we direct through this process agencies to do certain things, whether it's DPSST, whether it's when we did the fair and other things, without thinking about all these various layers that they're going to have to go through to get the results that we're looking for. So, I think I've learned in this process the number of obstacles and hoops that facilities and the advisory group, and then we also, I think when we passed the package for the fair, included another committee for them to have a review. So I think we have to bear some of this ourselves and what we do when we're asking the agencies to come back with certain things. And maybe we need to look at all of the various flows of information and pieces to get us to the outcome that we want to achieve.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, I think oftentimes people don't realize, I think when the legislature said divide up the Mill Creek property 200 or 300 acres and sell it for the benefit of the cultural trust, what all would be involved in doing that. It's not a simple matter, particularly when the city has a plan for how they want to see that developed. The state had a particular purpose, and then corrections also has some needs that needed to play into that. So you have multiple players, you have multiple issues that has to be dealt with, and it's not just, okay, you can put it on the market and sell it tomorrow.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Lori, but are you saying maybe there was a half-baked idea to do some of that?
No, I'm not, Mr. Chair. I think that people just oftentimes don't see what lies beneath that. And so you deal with the intent or direction to us, and we deal with the details. And then maybe the details, you're not necessarily aware of what it will be.
Is that what the devil is?
The details are there. Number one, the legislative fiscal office, is my understanding, may have some direction from leadership as to how the committees will operate by the end of this week. May have. That was from Senator Schrader. But barring, and I know this always gives my legislative fiscal office a great deal of grief when I do this, barring the fact that we do not have any rules that operate these committees other than just the fact that we will hear some bills as assigned to us by full through the co-chairs, I'm going to exercise the authority given to me as the chair and appoint a committee of we need to get to the bottom of what's going on relative to the Mill Creek site as it relates to facilities and the Capital Planning Commission. I'm going to appoint a committee of two. Senator, this will be the ladies' committee of two. How's that, Senator Winters? From this committee to be a ad hoc fact finding committee, and to bring back Representative Johnson. Did you receive the information that was sent to us by Mr. Capp from the Capital Planning Commission yesterday?
No, Mr. Chair. It may well be in my office. I just haven't seen it.
I am very embarrassed about that because I did receive a copy that was checkmarked to Tom Butler, but I think you were second on the list in that checkmarking down it, and I assumed that you were going that each member of this sub was going to receive that. So if
it
you
could
will,
be up there, and I just
yeah,
don't
if
know
you it. If you'll come by my office and take my copy of it and share it with Senator Winters, then I'd like to get a little bit more to the bottom, because it appeared that there were at least six meetings where the Capital Planning Commission had where that issue may have been on the either on the agenda or was on the table at some portion during the meal. So
the
DPSST side of Mill Creek. So if I could just assign
you.
Well,
I sat in on at least three of them.
Okay. And it looked like with the dates of the minutes of the meetings that they had there, it was about six meetings where it was on the menu, so or on the table, if not on the menu. So if you folks would, and I did this last time, and it upset the Legislative Fiscal Office, but because you can't make any decisions, you're an ad hoc committee of one on one. If you would just do just a little bit of research, and then perhaps by the first of next week, we could have just a brief report back from you, because I've felt, and particularly now that the Capital Planning Commission or that the Facilities Division is now asking for additional staff to assist with the issues relative to the Mill Creek site, I see an ongoing, and it comes back to some of the questions that Senator Winters was asking about, and that is, you know, at what point do we get more money tied up into these than really it's worth to have just gone out and made the decision to just go ahead and dispose of the activity or the facility or the property that's involved there. You know, I used to have a great, great hunting dog, a German Shorthair. But you know, those German Shorthairs come with awfully long tails. And we really, really loved Lady a lot. And so what we did was, so that she wouldn't get hurt too bad, we docked her tail 1 inch at a time over a period of about 3 months. So she never did like me very much after that. And we didn't want to just dock it all at one time. So it really hurt her.
Just so I can clarify here, this position that we're asking for has been working all this biennium. Was a limited duration position to deal with this work, some of this work.
I appreciate that, but there's ongoing expenses that appears.
And it isn't just Mill Creek property, though. It's a number of the properties that all have different things going on with them.
Well, and in that regard, I appreciate that, Lori. And so, Representative Johnson, if you and Senator Winters would at least have an opportunity to confer and conflab over that issue, I would appreciate it. Please continue, Lori. I will interrupt you for a long time here.
The next item is the parking and alternative transport. There's we've added some spaces, but we've not added staff, and we're not asking for any additional staff for parking. This is a program performance measure specifically rated to each area. The leasing fee, which we were just talking about for real property, it's a fixed 1.4% of the rent versus a commercial range, usually around 2.5% for renewals and 5% on new leases. And we compare to market all the time on this issue. operations and maintenance. This is the uniform rent measure that we talked about earlier. Workload staff increases as space increases, but the staff-to-work ratio remains relatively flat. Project management, this is the construction management area. There's an hourly rate range between $79 to $115, including the reimbursable, and these rates are lower or competitive with the market rates. The architectural space planner is the same way. And with construction project stuff, there's no simple workload measure because some of the larger projects with larger square feet are far less work than for some of the smaller projects. It just depends on the project. They're unique and specific. And we have to estimate for each one what kind of time we're going to put into it. The parking workload, basically there's 751 spaces per FTE. There's 6 FTE in this program. And that ratio is below the average for comparable programs, and there was a study done in 2000 about comparing to other cities as well as university systems and stuff on the parking program.
Since 2000, has there been any attempt to automate that so that I know that there are tremendous inroads being made and self-park and those kinds of things?
Most of these are leased spaces, so there isn't parking meter collection, that sort of thing. But in the areas where we do have the public and metered parking, we're looking at other alternatives than the meters because they're high maintenance. And we have some proposals to change part of those to something more along the line that City of Portland has, where there's a central box and you pay and that sort of thing rather than the individual meters.
We're
exploring those things.
I certainly think that would be something that should be looked at here.
We're looking at these are the essential packages, the O&O packages, personal services. Within that package, there's an addition of 28,000 and a decrease for the vacancy factor of 135,000, and so a net decrease in the personal services package. The O2O package is a program adjustment. This is the $500,000 that went to Morrow County when we sold the Boardman property. That was a one-time thing in the budget, so that's coming out. And then the inflation price list adjustment are just those that were allowed in the budget in the O3O package.
Legislative Fiscal Office had a just brief question about parking. I overlooked that.
I just wanted to go back to the parking. There had been some thought in the past of like the Capitol Mall parking structure and some others, going from a reserved space parking where every space was locked to one car to going to a more commercial model where you basically rent out 120% of the spaces because of the constant flow of in and out.
And we, Mr. Chair Dallas, we have looked at that alternative. We haven't gone to that yet in the Capitol Mall. The open lots that are up above are managed that way. There is an assigned space. It's a first come, first spend. I'm talking about the yellow lot and the green lot. And so those are overbooked. We could do that, but then it depends on the philosophy and also how employees, if they have a paid parking spot and they don't have an assigned space, how that would work. It would be first come, first serve. We still have that as an option. And I think as we look at parking and parking needs on the mall, that becomes more of an issue.
Mr. Chair, Lori, are you still hearing from the Grant neighborhood about parking?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we've been meeting regularly. The parking manager has been for the state with the Grant neighborhood folks to deal with the problem they have with parking in their neighborhood. We attended the city meeting on changing, and we're supportive of changing that area to 1 hour instead of 2 hour. And we have been getting information from the neighbors about who's parked there, and if we've looked them up on the system, and if they're a state employee, we've contacted them directly and said, you know, there's some issues with the neighborhood. We'd like to explore with you what alternatives we have for you for parking, and we're trying to work through it rather directly with the neighbors.
Please.
Second question. Are you exploring any more park and ride?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, you know, the standard, and I think Capital Planning Commission addressed this a little bit too, is one parking spot for every two employees. That actually is a policy that they adopted through the Capital Planning Commission about the same time that the Capital Mall was getting built and the parking mall was being built. And so we're at the point, before we had slightly more parking spaces than that ratio, but when North Mall opens, we won't. We'll be right at that maximum. And we are working with the city on their study of parking and transit in the downtown area. That study's supposed to be completed sometime this spring. And I think then we will have to determine with the city, you know, is it appropriate to have another parking structure proposed for the mall. The city has wanted us to support their alternate transit policies and to make, you know, transit, bus transit, and car ride share and those kinds of things. They've wanted us to partner with them on that and not build more parking. So it's a little bit of a balance between at what point have you exhausted that alternative and you really do need another parking structure.
Well, just to follow up, we discussed at the Capital Planning Commission meeting with the city of talking about not so much the riders in the city and try to encourage more transit, but the amount of visitors and individuals coming into the mall and whether or not we, you know, the utilization of some maybe properties that's maybe out off on Portland Road, someplace that's inexpensive, to do a shuttle into the Capitol in order to mitigate some of the complaints that we're receiving from the neighborhoods. That's a huge problem for us here in Salem. Like I said, our neighborhoods and associations are very active, and when people can't find places to park here at the Capitol, they're parking all through the neighborhoods. And so I just wondered if you had explored those avenues at all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we've expanded the park and ride out at the Airport Road, and that's pretty well utilized most of the time. There were some other park and rides that have also been set up with the city and other portions. You know, the question around visitors to the mall and can we get them to use that avenue, we run the shuttles for free, you know, from those areas. I don't know that we've explored how to tap into those folks, and that may be something more that we could explore during the session, because you have a lot more people trying to get down here. But the Grant neighborhood issue is more an ongoing. They're very concerned about North Mall opening, and we have a plan to work extensively with those agencies.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Mark.
This is the budget reduction package. This is the three custodians we talked about earlier from centralized garbage. This is the package 111 that has the two positions in it, one for construction and one for the facility specialist for, one for the real estate and then one for the capital projects. We have projects that we can't get to during a biennium often, and we carry forward into the next biennium. And these positions are both supported from that basically the projects that they're managing, not from any other source of funds. These are the budget notes. This was asked to submit preventative maintenance schedules for its facilities and direct other agencies to do likewise. The Capital Projects Advisory Board work, that was part of the work that they did, and that has been done. The enhancement of management capabilities was a general budget note for all of Department of Administrative Services. In terms of facilities, these are the things that we have done. We've strengthened that management of state agencies through the Capital Project Advisory Board's review of the agency plans and maintenance and deferred maintenance. We talked about that earlier. We've also had the energy conservation policy where we've collected and tracked the agency consumption data for energy resources. This is water, heat, heating, gas, that sort of thing, electric. We've established a tracking system, and we're reporting those things back to the Office of Energy, who is charged with working with agencies that don't save the 10% that has been dictated by statute from the last session. So we're actively working with Department of Energy to make that happen and working with the agencies themselves. This is the vacancy report. There's 207 FTE in the division. We right now we have 29 vacancies. Five are in recruitment. Two of those five have been filled at this point. We have 12 positions that are frozen. Seven are custodial. Two are trades maintenance workers, a principal contributor, an engineering specialist, and a ground maintenance worker. And we have 11 positions on hold waiting for completion of the North Mall and the emergency coordination facility. And then we have one position that's to be abolished.
And those vacancies are all full-time positions?
Yes, I believe they all are.
Thank you.
There may be one that's slightly under that. The next portion of this, we're going to move into the capital construction and capital improvement program. We own the 34 buildings we talked about earlier that are over $1 million in replacement value. That's 21% in the major building square footage, and this is just a listing of the buildings. Capital construction, this is the definition so that you know what we're talking about. Capital construction are projects that are more than $500,000, capital improvement being those that are less than that. The capital construction overview, basically this is acquisition or construction of major structures or groups.
Excuse me, Laurie, with regard to the $500,000 limit for remodel, renovation, construction issues, is that codified or is that just an internal procedure?
That's been the definition, budget definition, for as long as I can remember of what capital improvement is versus capital construction. I don't know if that's in statute or not.
Senator Winters, Representative Johnson, when you're looking at that capital planning advisory and the capital planning commission, capital projects advisory versus capital planning commission issues, maybe that $500,000 is something that comes into play where you put some real teeth in that advisory too. So just for consideration. Depending upon where that's at in the overall process.
Planning Commission doesn't deal with from standpoint of the dollar.
Right, they don't, and maybe that's the way that you sink the teeth in to the project advisory, the capital project advisory board, is that it has to expand their duties at $500,000. I've handed a note to Dallas that may be a budget note issue that you and Representative Johnson come up with, Senator. Thank you. Please proceed.
Basically, it includes land acquisition. It includes the improvements or addition to existing structures over $500,000 and then planning for future capital construction projects, regardless of the dollar amount. Basically, our responsibility is to coordinate that. The budget request that before you focuses on preserving and improving the existing facilities, replacing functionally obsolete building equipment with newer and more flexible technology. That's like in lighting and heating, venting, and air conditioning and security systems. Planning better utilization of space and making facilities more adaptable to the change in organization and government, and acquiring existing buildings and remodeling for the agency needs. This is a summary of the construction budget, which is $50 million, $17.8 million being asked for to repair and renovate systems. That includes elevator repairs, lights, power, heating, venting. And it also has a complete renovation of the Justice Building at $10.5 million. You may be familiar with that building. It was initially going to be updated, renovated, when a new Justice Center was built on the mall. That Justice Center wasn't approved, and so the building is still in really dire need of renovation. It needs earthquake upgrade. It has roof leak problems. It's got heating, venting, and air conditioning issues. It needs to be renovated. We have a window of opportunity in that the Commerce Building, Water Resources, is going to be moving out of when North Mall opens. And there will be what we call swing space in the Commerce Building to move those folks, because they want to be close on the mall at all times, to move those folks over there in stages and renovate the Justice Building two floors at a time, essentially, with using the Commerce as that swing space. Otherwise, and it's less costly to the state to do that because we're doing it within state buildings as opposed to trying to move these folks off the mall somewhere into lease space that would be short-term, two-year lease space that would be fairly expensive. So that project.
How old is the old Justice Building, Mr. Chair?
How old
is the Justice
Building? Oh, I don't know if I can tell you that.
Historic building.
It is a historic building. Mm-hmm. And we will have to deal with those issues in the building also. I think it's been 20 years since it's had work done on it.
Senator Winters, will you be able to convince your constituents that it's okay to spend $10.5 million in Salem while you've got some of that allocated to swing space?
It's going to be tough for me, given the committee that I chair, to spend anything that has to do with construction.
All right, thank you, Senator. We won't allocate anything for swing space then, will we?
The next project on here is a lab project for DEQ and the health division. That would be a joint. They don't currently have a joint lab. They have two separate labs that are housed in the Portland State University buildings on campus at Portland State. Portland State has wanted to for quite some time for them to move out of this space because they have huge growth needs themselves and want that space utilized for Portland State University. In addition, these labs have both grown, both in terms of numbers and complexity of their work, and the facilities don't adequately provide for their needs. So we were asked to take a look at what was available in the area that could be renovated for a joint lab. We have done a property search. We've looked through probably half a dozen different buildings in Portland with both of these agencies, and there is a building that is available that would meet the needs for a lab like this. We've worked with the city of Portland also on siting this kind of thing and worked through their issues. This is a proposal. The building, because we've not had the money to purchase it or the approval from the legislature, the building may be gone by the time that this would be approved, but there would be similar buildings if we did another property search, most likely in this range.
Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, respectfully, when the proposal begins, Portland State wants. I have to cue off of what Senator Winters said. I think Portland State, maybe there's some opportunity for a conversation with Portland State. We are doing enormous damage in terms of human suffering in this budget. And simply because Portland State is feeling a little pinched for space, I'm not particularly moved to look at a $32 million price tag compared with the loss of troopers, the loss of people in nursing homes and developmentally disabled facilities. And I just think because Portland State wants is not a driver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think what this does is put before you an option to look at. And the legislature clearly has to decide whether they want to go this direction or not. I am not the best person to speak to DEQ and DHS need for this facility. They had a consultant do the work on it. The issue with Portland State is clearly before you an option to tell Portland State, you know, you get to keep these folks. But these folks don't have adequate space at Portland State right now. If Portland State were to keep them, there would need to be something done in terms of the space that is available to them, and the adequacy of the facilities would need some work. So there are this is to put something on the table that would say this is what it would look like if you were to do a joint lab. It is more cost effective for them to do a joint lab than two separate labs because lab facilities are expensive to begin with. So there would be some sharing of some of the investment.
I'm sympathetic to the space needs, but at a time when I think now we're 3 weeks into a session that is going to have challenges that I think will tax us all before we leave here, that for you all to set up some kind of a discipline when folks come to you and say, we want, I think we need to start looking at everything through the prism that Representative Winters set out when we take a look at some of these.
I'll just ask one question relative to that. Would this $32 million come through assessments that are made, or is this a general fund request?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, both DEQ, it would have to come through DEQ and DHS's budget.
Okay.
So their funding mechanisms, they would have to speak to in terms
okay.
of how
All
they
right.
would pay the debt service.
But how is it that we would, capital budget?
We would issue COPs.
Okay,
and
I
they
see.
Would have to pay
so,
the,
so that would be your, that would be your involvement would be
That's
the COP.
That's why it's in here. We
okay.
would issue the
right.
COPs. They would pay the debt
Dallas?
Service.
Dallas?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our analysts have been in contact with the Health Division people and the Department of Environmental Quality to let them know that this discussion will be brought up in the course of their budget hearings also.
And I guess... And
since I have one of the budgets.
Yeah, and I guess in that regard, the concern I would have is that, Senator, as you see that budget come through, you'll also see how much of that is, in fact, general fund and how much. And I want to be sensitive to the health issues, because you may have a rather substantial amount of federal funding available as you proceed with that. Senator Devon is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The figure that was given for the cost of a new facility, does that include the very extensive cost of the lab itself, actually? So
Mr.
it's an all-inclusive cost?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, it includes the purchase price of the building as well as the renovation of that building. There were cost estimates done for what it would cost to put labs in. They had a joint study done, and I would clarify that this has been a long-term project between the two agencies, and it's coming. The conclusion of it is coming at an inopportune time, I think, in terms of the financial condition of the state. But it has been a need that's been identified, and we were asked about a year ago to begin the property search.
Follow-up, Senator.
This is how it's coming to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that although a project like this could be delayed until sometime that the state was in better condition, I have toured those facilities, and they are pretty cramped facilities that don't meet probably current standards, and particularly the lab for the Department of Public Health doesn't actually even have some of the equipment it should have to be able to perform the functions it's supposed to be able to perform.
Well, in that regard, these are special purpose buildings. Would this be assessed through the uniform rent, or would it come through as a request?
Mr. Chair, this would not be a uniform rent building.
Okay,
COPs
right.
would be issued, and these two agencies would pay for this building
okay.
directly. They would pay the full debt service.
Your point is well taken, Senator. These really become very special purpose facilities.
I need to clarify. The debt service, while we would do this in the 03-05 biennium, the debt service to the agencies would really become and the moving costs in 05-07. So you won't see a budget package in either one of these budgets right now because the debt service and moving costs would be in the next biennium.
But the debt service would be paid through the uniform rents assessment factor, or would it be?
No, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Directly.
It would become part of their base budget rent charges or that they would be paying, essentially.
0507.
Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify
Please
even further. The $32 million, roughly, that will be issued in COPs for costs in the 03-05 biennium will include a portion of capitalized costs, so that basically any debt service that would have initially interest costs that would have been due in the 03-05 biennium have been capitalized or would be capitalized into that amount. So that's what's preventing any debt service costs actually having to be paid during the 03-05 biennium.
Okay. I appreciate that.
The next portion is planning projects. This is $500,000. This is routine preliminary study of possible state computer center. There's a need to consolidate computer centers that the state currently has. Then talk about building a computer center jointly between several agencies, and this is planning money. There's also planning funds for the upgrade to the Eugene State Office Building. That building is in downtown Eugene and needs to be renovated and reoccupied. Portions of it are not occupied now because DHS moved to a different lease location from the downtown area. So this Eugene State Office Building upgrade would be done in the 05-07 biennium, but this is the planning, preliminary design and planning money to get that started. The next, we're moving to the capital improvement program. Capital improvement programs, remember, are less than $500,000. They maintain health and safety, keep buildings in compliance with new code and ordinance requirements, maintains the capital grounds field and aesthetics, mechanical and electrical program, energy consumption projects, and use of evaluation and conservation use of the state-owned buildings, and then any kind of occupancy changes that need to be made as people move or reconfigure or downsize. Here's the list of projects, $3.5 million. The first one, the Capitol Mall and Grounds Maintenance Project, the fountain, the wall of water that's out directly in front of the Capitol needs major repair. It is leaking underneath and was not adequately designed for the chemical treatment that we need to put into it for the summer use by the number of children that play in the fountain. We need to do pedestrian improvements out in front of the Capitol. The city has put up some signage, but it's still not adequate for the volume of traffic on the mall. And there's irrigation system improvements. We have electrical and mechanical system maintenance projects. We have alteration for tenant changes. We need to replace the carpet in three buildings. And then there's always unplanned emergencies that happen where we have capital improvement projects. The capital improvement projects are funded through the depreciation that comes out of uniform rent. Is how where the pool of money comes
from. Excuse me just a moment, Laurie. Senator Winters has a question.
She answered it where it came from uniform.
It's the depreciation component so that you continually do the things to the building.
And we don't set up a reserve? Or that's...
That is
part of the reserve. Okay, all right.
That's how those are funded.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just to briefly go over both of the budgets for capital improvements and capital construction, and some of this will be repetitive, so I'll brief fairly quickly and we can deal with the details in work session. The capital improvement budget is $3.5 million, as Lori mentioned, for 0305. This is a 6.6% increase from the 2103 legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session, and as she mentioned, the prize provides for remodeling and renovation projects costing $500,000 or less. Quickly how we developed the budget. Last biennium's budget was roughly $3.3 million. Essential packages, which is largely phase in of new expected projects and phase out of projects that have been completed, was just over $219,000. And as Lori mentioned, the source of revenue is the Capital Projects Fund, which is the depreciation component of uniform rent. The capital construction budget is just over $50 million for the biennium. That includes the major projects that Lori mentioned a few moments ago. The budget provides for all of those projects that are over $500,000. This one is a little bit unique as far as how it's developed. The 0103 budget was $11.6 million roughly. Base budget adjustments, basically the entire biennial budget for 0103 is wiped out. The slate is clean as far as moving to the next biennium. And then in a policy package, you will find the list of all the projects to bring in for the 0305 biennium. So there actually is no base budget. All of the items Lori mentioned are in a policy package. And again, here I've identified the source of revenues for those projects, which includes certificates of participation, which are repaid then by agencies or through uniform rent, depending on what the project is itself, and then again the capital projects fund, which is the depreciation component of uniform rent.
Other questions of Ms. Parker? I was asleep at the switch writing a note. I beg your pardon. The note that I wrote, maybe I should just ask about. And that's as we've gone through some other budgets, and this is a question I've asked a couple of times now of Dallas, as we get ready to examine the uniform rent and other assessments of these various divisions within the Department of Administrative Services Corps. One of the things that we've had for some of the, for instance, the health licensing boards and other small agencies, is a sample that shows what a 48 to 50 month period looks like of where our cash is at month to month, with the uniform rent assessments increasing or staying the same. So that's one of the graphs that's always been very helpful to me to look at as we were looking at changes to fees by, for instance, the health licensing boards themselves, or in this case, any changes to the proposed assessments on the various uniform rents or other assessments by two agencies, by Department of Administrative Services.
Okay.
So that would be very, very helpful.
I'll work with Legislative Fiscal to get a better idea of what it is you're looking for.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Other questions? Okay. And did that bring us...
Okay,
you didn't do the capital improvement budget, or did you? You didn't.
Yes,
you
yes,
did. I was... I beg your pardon.
It's that note again.
Okay. Are there further questions then of Lori or Ms. Parker? Hearing and seeing none, tomorrow we are scheduled to do...
Procurement, fleet, and surplus services division.
That's a mouthful. That's got some acronyms.
Used to have more letters.
That's got some acronyms.
In advance of that, members of the committee, I have, as you may be aware, Senator Carno had an interim task force on the motor pool, which is considered fleet activities. I'm going to give you her report to the Senate President on that. And also, with that, there were a couple of questions that were asked about could motor pools be leased to a third party, and there's a response, and what would we get, or what are the values of the motor pool properties carried on county rent rolls. So I'll give these for your advance review if you care to be prepared to discuss.
Representative Johnson, if you can come up to my office and pick up that item for the Capital Planning Commission issue. I would appreciate that. And with that, we will stand adjourned until evening tomorrow. Thank you.